Hi, this is Kalyan Karmakar, and welcome to Foodocracy for Her. Those of you who can recognize this, I'm wearing a gamosa, which is a very traditional thing of Ahom or Assam. And from Mumbai, I'm going to take you all the way over to Guwahati to meet Sanjukta Das, Ni Dakta, and we are going to discuss that as well. She has a blog called Grub Tales, but she's done a lot more, and then she's sort of working almost as a sort of self-initiated ambassador of Assamese food, and we are going to sort of see what she's doing. And we've spoken to Sanjukta earlier once about the Bihu festivals, but this time it's going to be more about her life. So welcome on board, Sanjukta.
Thank you so much, Kalyan. Thanks for having me here back again.
No, absolute really pleasure.
Nice to be back again. Yes.
Absolute pleasure. And do you want to sort of quickly do away with the Das and Datta confusion, because on Instagram you're Das and your Zoom profile says Datta. So for people who are searching for you.
some basically both. Whatever makes it, like, you know, comfortable and convenient. This basically was a change that I made to mellow down the confusion that we were having, because there's two Sanjukta Dattas here in Guwahati. So I really didn't want a designer tag. So I thought that was
vegan
name, yes.
Lovely. So I thought we should, because of people searching for you later and all of that. Now, yeah. Sanjukta's story is very interesting, because while she's in Guwahati right now, she's actually earlier grown up in another part of Assam, which is Dibrugarh, and which is considered to be like the tea state capital of Assam. And then she's also, you know, lived in Ahmedabad. She's lived in Mumbai a bit. So a lot of experiences before she went to Guwahati. And there are two sides to her professional life. So we're going to discover that. So one is what she does for her business and everything. And then there is the food part of it. But why should I tell you? Let's hear it from her. So Sanjukta, first of all, tell me a bit about how was Dibrugarh and how was growing up in Dibrugarh? Was that very different from Guwahati?
Absolutely different. Like you've mentioned, it's the tea city of the country. So just by the name of it, there are tea gardens all over and all around the city. It's a small town, I would like to call it always. You know, there's always a bunch of people who would like to call it as an ever-growing city. And but for me, we have always lived in tea gardens. So we were a little away from civilization, most of the times away from the towns. So for me, it has always a bunch of tea gardens all overlapped with another. So you miss the big drain and you're into another, you know, tea garden already. So it was a slow life, of course. It was a very slow life. We grew up in tea gardens. We moved from tea garden to tea garden because my father worked in a tea garden. Okay. So we lived in very small pockets and places in and around the district. And, you know, growing up was always fun, you know. I mean, by the time I think I was 7, I knew the entire tea process already, you know, not knowing how to boil an egg, but I could tell somebody how to make, you know, tea, quality tea from the green leaves. I think that was the kind of life. We were always around tea garden. And so we lived a very healthy, you know, there were a lot of fresh air and a lot of places to, you know, move around, play, cycle the whole day. So that is how.
And there were schools nearby,
you know, the nearby the nearby thing is always a fast, because everything from a tea garden is so far off. I mean, I remember traveling hours and hours to reach a small place called Sonari to, you know, to go to our school every day. So we start up very early in the morning, 6 o'clock. We'd be all piled up inside the car, and that would take forever to reach our the little small township that I'm talking of, where our school was situated. But then, you know, these were all adventures that I talk to my children these days about. And they're like always like, are you sure? Are you like for real? You traveled so much to go to a school. But I think that made up to the times that we lived in, and we were totally away from something called the Netflix and the internet. I think so these were the way how we did a lot of adventures. I think that builds up the memory, you know. So yeah, that's how we grew up.
And tell me a bit about like your social circle. Like, would you interact primarily with the other tea garden families and kids or stuff like that, or would you get a chance to interact with maybe the locals, the people who'd work at the tea gardens? Was it like a bit of a bubble, or you know?
So the beginning of 90s, when we lived in tea garden, it was a very, very, staunch hierarchic kind of social circuit that we were in. So most of the times...
very British influenced.
British influence. You like it or you don't like it. There's always this subtle way of telling that we were not allowed to interact with people who were, at that lower hierarchy. So for us, to socialize was to go to the local gymkhanas, which again were very, very British and had a very autarkic way of, having people inducted in. So our social circuit was a bunch of uncles and aunties, uncles playing snookers and aunties playing bridge the whole day. And there would be just a few kids of our age, and we would go swimming or we would go play hide and seek, or maybe just make a ruckus at the tennis club. So that's how that was our initial social interactive years while we were growing up, the formative years.
And you are Assamese, right?
Yes,
I am.
Yeah.
But the other people were from all over,
all over.
So it's a very cosmopolitan.
Very cosmopolitan inside the garden community. Yes. So we met a lot of Punjabis. We had Sindhis. We had Anglo-Indians. We had this all sort of people from different states coming in together, and we were a part of a very, very cosmo culture in that way. Yes.
And did you get to try out their food?
Yes, of course. And then I always when we were in the gymkhanas and we would be served a particular sandwich or a particular cutlet, we would club ka khana hai, it's the regular stuff. But now when we look back at it, these are the long forgotten food. These are the typical gymkhana food that you don't get served otherwise anywhere that way. Yes. So I have these amazing vivid memories of these wonderful juices and sandwiches and 3 p.m. high tea. And those tea cakes that would come along, those shortbread cookies that would come along.
Scones,
I remember a lot of aromas, the bakery aroma that would come from the Khansama's kitchen. So yes, I have these amazing vivid memories of our growing up years in tea gardens.
We're very enlightened sort of thing. Now, I was also wondering that since there are people from different communities, say during the festivals, or would the people call you home? Would you get to try a bit of Punjabi, Sindhi, South Indian food or anything like that? Anglo-Indian food in their houses?
Yes. I mean, from a very young age, we were, exposed to multi-cuisine. There would be one auntie inviting us for a dinner, and we would be subjected to some very interesting looking rice, which is like colored and, has a lot of beautiful aroma with a huge chunk of mutton sitting on top of it. And they would call it a biryani, and that would be like when we were about five. And I remember the best of the dosas I had was in... Ooh. In a very small pocket called Sapaikhati. I mean, most of Assamese people would not know about these places. Yeah. They're so small and so forgotten. So these amazing parties happened in these smaller areas, which were so distant from civilization, so far off, traveling it. We would start as early as 3 p.m. for a lunch, for a dinner at 8, So this is how much we would travel for a dosa or biryani or pindi chole. But then, yes, we had a lot of exposure to such kind of cuisine, and it was a very, very beautiful amalgamation. I think a lot of communities came together, and then there was always a display of their cuisine. And I think that is where we started respecting food. It started very early, I would really greatly was always in an awe of amazing platters that would be laid in front, be it a simple banoffee pie or the classic caramel custard to handmade ice creams to hand rolled teas. I think we started respecting food way early, much before we understood the complexities of food in general.
In fact, your blog GrubTales shows a bit of that. I mean, there's Assamese food and there are truffles and desserts and a lot of that. And when did your exposure to Assamese food happen? I mean, at home, were you having like local, were you having your home food, Assamese food at home? Well,
Sundays were always Assamese food. But I'll tell you how it started. You know, I started respecting a lot of, you know, the whole idea about showcasing our food came from the slow cooking movement. When I started reading more and more about the slow cooking movement, a lot of people associate me here in Assam as an advocate of slow cooking movement. Now, I was very deeply moved by the whole idea of this movement and how it started, how it began, and what was the ideology behind it, what are the objectives behind it. So I started understanding that, you know, respect every kind of food, but promote your local indigenous food the first. You know, you need to have a fair idea about your indigenous food, because that's the healthiest. That's how you need to, you know, sort of build in an ecosystem where everyone, not from generations to generations, start understanding that, you know, by just promoting local food, you're not just helping, you know, the sustainable farming or sustainable living, but you're also doing a lot of things that are so conjoined with each other. They're all intertwined. And I think, yes, this whole idea, the movement, the objectives, the aim of this movement made me fall in love. You know, this was always there. The food, our regional cuisine was always there, but it made me fall more and more in love with the whole idea of promoting this food and, you know, showcasing it as much as I can to the outsiders, people living outside the state, and telling them how healthy, what a healthy food, what a healthy alternative cuisine we have here in Assam and Northeast India.
And how did it come across the slow food movement? Because if I trace your steps back, you were not really professionally into food, right? So college happened. College, what did you do?
So college happened. I studied political science in college. That was in bachelor's. In Ahmedabad, that is where I finished my college education. Okay. And that happened like, you know, I just had to finish college, and, you know, there was this young teenager who wanted to just get away from college. And then there's this whole rosy world in front of you. And I wanted to do everything, probably finishing my graduation. I would have wanted to do a lot of things. But then, you know, choices narrow down as you go down the road and you mature and all of that. So after that, I worked for a bit. I did a lot of visa work. I was into a visa consultancy firm. So I did US student visas. So I really liked it, because, you know, there's this bunch of young energetic girls working in the consultancy. So I think I really liked it, and the energy was cool. And then these were the after work party friends also.
Which city was this? This was in Ahmedabad.
Oh, wow. So after that, you know, I worked, and my father was like, you know, very concerned, like any other typical East India father. He was very concerned that, you know, why is this girl not studying? You know, she needs to first educate herself, because no matter how much you study for your mom and your dad, you really don't know, you're not equipped, you know.
Unless you do post-graduation.
Yes, you know, finish your post-graduation. I knew that, you know, there would be a doctorate demand also coming in very soon. So for post-graduation, I returned to Dibrugarh and I finished my post-graduation. And after my post-graduation, I was like, I always have told you also in my initial conversations with you that I have always been a working person. I've, you know, sidetracked, and I have, you know, done a lot of work in some side, and then, you know, I tried to do a lot of research work also, what my parents wanted me to do. But then I could never settle down, you know. There was something that I thought that was a miss, and I really need to do something which is I'm very passionate about. And food came up, and this is when I thought that, you know, the initial storytelling or diary entry could be taken more seriously, and I could write about, you know, start reviewing restaurants on my own and tell the world, especially the people from the city, about restaurants, the new places where you can go and eat. So it was basically a diary entry that became more of a, you know, professional writing, serious writing. And then, you know, there's this bunch of 10 people who really enjoyed writing. And then I thought that, okay, now it's time to take it to another level, you know, another 100 people. And that is how it happened. But it happened in a very slow pace. But the thing is that I never stopped it. So
slow food and slow pace of writing.
Slow pace of writing, absolutely, yes.
So, I mean, she's got this other work thing where she runs a business. and where she says that's the bread and butter and food is the passion. So I'd gone to Guwahati once so far and very short trip, but Sanjukta made time and we met for breakfast. We had to the Vivanta and had a very traditional Omiya breakfast, and that's where she gave me this samosa. So I'm sweating in Mumbai, but I'm gamely wearing this on. Maybe in cooler Assam, it's a nicer idea. So I found it very interesting, the story of the diary which you're telling me about, because in a way, like the blogging movement also started like that. Initially, there were digital diaries about your life in a field which interests you, or it could be even general. So like, for example, there was this time when I was working in Fort in South Mumbai. So I would go down every afternoon at lunchtime and go to a place which I'd not been to before. There are a lot of traditional historical restaurants over there. Come back and write about them, take photos and blog about them in the evening. So I think you have a sort of similar story, right? When you finally went to Guwahati, which is your home now, it was a new city for you at one point. So tell us a bit about that.
So abruptly, one fine day, we were a very young and newly married couple.
Sorry to interject. Okay, you're still in Bombay. Okay.
We were in Bombay. And then one fine day, we thought that, you know, this is not going to be working. And Bombay is something that I really liked because I thought it was an extension of Ahmedabad. You know, I always felt home in Bombay. And I had so many friends. So I had a lot of activities to do in Bombay. We just like, you know, take the train and, you know, go to Church Gate and hang around and all of that. But then back home, we would realize we'll find the emptiness. We wanted to be closer to our home, to our families. And we got the first opportunity and we moved back to Guwahati. So the moment we landed in Guwahati, we realized one thing, that apart from the Assamese language, this place was totally alien to us. We know nothing about this place.
So Mumbai and Ahmedabad was more home to you than Guwahati.
Yes. And Guwahati was always a transit camp for us. So while coming from Dibrugarh, we would halt here for a few hours and take an ongoing train to Ahmedabad. From Ahmedabad, we would stop here for a couple of hours, take a connecting bus to Dibrugarh. So this was only a transit point for us. Apart from the bus stops and the railway stations, we had no clue about the city at all. So after coming here to Guwahati, the first thing we realized that we know nothing about the place. We had no friends here and our families were a little distant, you know, 500 kilometers. Though we were in the same state, we were still, you know, living apart. And there was absolutely no one with us. And we started, you know, feeling a little scared about ourselves, like how will we build up here? And that is when I thought that, you know, nothing doing, I'll start walking. And, you know, this is how you end up knowing a city. You walk. I mean, now it's a little difficult. Now it's more humid. Now it's more crowded. It's a lot of traffic.
So when was this? When was this? When
did this was in 2009. When Guwahati was rather growing than becoming a bustling city. So we had less of traffic, we had, you know, less of humidity and less of pollution. So you could comfortably walk around a few places. So I would just, you know, finishing my breakfast, I would just shut the door and start walking around. And that is how I started, you know, finding out places, maybe a hair salon, to a small restaurant where I can just have a meal peacefully, to a shopping complex, because there were no malls at that point in time. There were shopping complexes, if you know what I would mean. So that is how I started, you know, getting familiar with the city. And I would come back in the evening and start writing about it. You know, this is what I saw and this is exactly where it is. If you want
to find,
this is in a diary.
In a
physical diary. I still carry those diaries. I have about such 12 diaries and I have kept them because I time and time go back to those. You know, we belong to that era where we still like to make notes with a pen and a paper. So I like to keep it that way. My son, my eldest son, he keeps asking me, like, what do you do with those pen and the paper? You know, you can just fill it up in your iPad. And I said that we come from a generation where we still believe in picking up the pen, and you know, we still do our Saraswati Puja with our books and our pens in front of the goddess. So yeah, this is how I start a small diary entry and sharing with the diary inputs with a few friends became therapeutic for me. You know, I started doing it very seriously. So every day there would be a diary entry. Every day I would write, you know, yaha dhaniya zyada sasta hai, waha dhaniya local nahi hybrid hai. I would mention everything, you know, don't go to that shopping hut, you know, you get all these hybrid stuff. If you want the stuff, you need to go to that bazaar. So these were some inputs that I kept for probably for myself. I don't know why was I even writing those notes. But then I started telling it to friends. I started telling it to new people who would come into the city. And then they would ask me for reference, like, where would I go to meet a pediatrician? They need a doctor. They need a gynecologist. So everything would be in that diary. So kind of a recommendation diary became what it is today, a blog that I love, you know, writing in, taking pictures, you know, sharing it with friends. And it's still, I think it's a continuous process. It never ends. It just goes on.
Yeah, like on the Instagram feed, I was seeing this place where you get nice shingaras in a local bazaar, which you'd written about. And were you working at this stage when you came to Guwahati? Were you working at that time, or were you on some free time?
When we came into Guwahati, I had then quit from a think tank organization, and we just quit. And I was, you know, thinking of rebuilding our. I should, you know, go back to my research work, study, and work for a PhD. I attempted twice; it didn't happen. So,
which subject?
My area was international relations, so I thought I would be able to pursue it further. And you know, it was one subject that I'm still very passionate about. I really like reading about it and, you know, discussing about international affairs, world affairs, you know, global politics and all of that. These are some subjects that I really am keen and still would like to continue. But then it didn't happen. So I couldn't make it beyond the written exam. So twice I cleared the written exams, but I couldn't move forward. And then I realized that, you know, I was losing on my years. You know, I really need to think about, and if I want to do something that would help me earn money and, you know, something that I could, you know, tell that I'm professional in, this is how I'm earning my livelihood. And that is when Amazon happened, and I just jumped into it, not knowing what I'll do, because we are first generation entrepreneurs. People laughed at the idea when we casually mentioned it to our parents. And then they really laughed at the idea, saying that that's going to also go down to the drain and it's not going to happen. You know, we people are not into business. We don't have a business bent and all of that. So there was a lot of, there was no support and there was no hand holding for us, but we jumped into it. And I think
this is the warehousing, right? Amazon warehousing.
Yes, this is our last mile delivery partnership with Amazon.
And you won, I remember maybe before the pandemic, but you won if not many, but I definitely remember one, you won an entrepreneurship award for that, right?
Yes, so we were awarded by an organization called Women Economic Forum that happened in 2018 in Delhi. So we got that award for iconic woman changing the world for better. And then again, Samudra Manthan Awards 2018. Yeah, okay. In Bombay, yes. So we did get quite a bit of recognitions, because again, this is one sector that is generally tagged as a male-dominated sector, and then women coming and working on it. Yeah. So I think we were fairly awarded. But then work doesn't stop. You continue. You know, with a tiara on, you still continue with your work. Oh. So we've been managing to do pretty well. I think we did pretty well in the pandemic also. Because people stopped shopping outside, going out of their homes, and they resorted to shopping online. So I think we as front runners during COVID time also had managed to deliver every parcel, every order that people have ordered. And so that we take really, really pride. I mean, whenever our customer says a thank you, I think that is another big award that we get for ourselves.
That's fabulous. And I wanted to share this because people know one aspect of you, but I wanted them to know the other aspect also. And like you said, I mean, that's such a male-dominated area, but for you to create that and then to be awarded nationally and to run it successfully during the pandemic, when I mean online delivery became such a essential service is really commendable. Now I was earlier asking about the slow food movement. So how did you get to know about that? How did you come across that?
So it was, I think, in the year 2016 when Shillong hosted the slow cooking movement. I mean, it was an initiative by government of Meghalaya, and then they did the slow cooking food festival. And I chanced upon to just go there for a day and, you know, have a look at it. I just took it as one another ethnic, you know, cuisine kind of get together where you get to see a different tribes showcasing their cuisine in that platform. So it was just since it's just an hour and a half drive from Guwahati, I thought that I should just go and have a look at it's so
Shillong is just an hour and a half.
It's just an hour and a half. I mean, it would be a crime if you visit Guwahati and you don't peep into Shillong, you know, it's so close by. So, yeah, so that is how it happened. Most of our friends were visiting at that point in time. So I thought that it could be a very nice way of, you know, taking a break, a day's break from Guwahati and, you know, go to the beautiful, cold, pristine Shillong and have a look at what is happening there. And I have always been thinking that I should be visiting Shillong for their wine festivals, for their food festivals, because they're known for it, you know. So when the slow food movement happened there in Shillong, and I just went there to participate as an audience, you know, from the other side, I was amazed. I was bedazzled, you know. I don't know. I just had my mouth shut and I just had to look at everything that was in front, you know. It was done beautifully. It was done in a manner that everyone visiting who had no idea about this movement goes back home with, you know, their heads filled with knowledge and understanding about this movement. So once I did that, I came back to Guwahati and I started reading about it, reading about this movement and how our model villages being set up, how these model villages, you know, carry forward to and take the movement down to the other small communities and villages, and how our entire network of village, you know, are all close-knit, and then they come together and encourage the other farmers to grow seeds, you know, so that, you know, they give it back to these model villages and they start growing these crops. In return, they give back the seeds. So it's a beautiful way of preserving your heritage ingredients, which helps you to preserve your heritage cuisine. It helps in sustaining development activities. It helps the local farmers to grow local stuff, which the weather, you know, our weather conditions helps in these agriculture. I mean, I was talking to the organization that I am very closely working with, the India Food Tourism. And I was talking to Chef Rajiv Goel, and we were like, you know, talking about, look, what, you know, our own millets have done, you know, what probably the quinoa couldn't do. And, you know, people are, you know, so they are embracing our local ingredients. I mean, the ingredients that weather conditions of our nation support. And I mean, this is exactly what the slow food movement tells us about. You know, grow with whichever is local. I mean, and the best part about this movement is it says that, you know, you embrace every food, you know, every cuisine with your both your arms, but, you know, keep your regional cuisine a little more closer. And so I think it aligned with my philosophy in life. And I started reading more and more about it. And I started associating myself with people who are already in this movement, who are crusaders, who are already been in this movement for years together. And learning and working with them was an amazing, you know, journey. And way back in 2019, just before the pandemic, we got an invitation to join the farmers market, which is again a model market, model village of the slow food movement of Nagaland. We visited Nagaland and we were amazed to see how a small pocket near Dimapur is you know is holding the you know mantle for us and showing us ways how a handful of people being in this movement, is carrying it forward and giving us some of the finest examples. So I think it's more of influence by reading, influence with people associated with the movement that helped me to connect myself more and more with the movement.
And what you've said is just amazing, because, you know, when we think of such things like slow food movement and so on, we normally tend to think of the bigger cities and the better known chefs, the better known writers and so on. But you're saying that in Meghalaya, then in Shilla, in Gangtok, in all these places, and in the smaller towns and smaller villages, probably there's far more work happening on that than in the larger cities. I also found it interesting when you're talking about your academic sort of background in political science and then international relations, mm-hmm. and your attempt to do a PhD, which didn't work out. But see, from what I understand, you are an ambassador from you are a junior ambassador of the Indian Tourism Organization, right?
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that. What is that all about?
It's again another organization that I have recently been inducted to. It's an organization which again very closely works with regional food. And I feel that, you know, since I've been put into the platform, I see that, you know, why not take it as an opportunity and start promoting our regional cuisine and start talking about these sensitive things that we generally try not to talk about, because we all have become so global, and, you know, our dining tables have been invaded by food that doesn't necessarily need to be there, you know.
Yes.
So when an organization speaks about regional cuisine, when an organization starts speaking about local ingredients, sustainable development, sustainable farming, you know, when they speak about the carbon emissions and all of that, you know, it just interests you so much, because you have always been part of you know, such an ideology that it overlaps with an organization. And yes, I have all earlier worked with the chefs of the organization. I have worked with them at the Northeast Food Show. We got an opportunity to work together for you know, good 5 days in Meghalaya. And then while talking to them, you know, we were all talking at the end of the day, we were all talking about sustainable development. We were talking about local food, local ingredients, regional food, and how, you know, fast food and how factory food can be replaced by traditional food as alternative cuisine. And once when your favorite topics come up, you know, the excitement is like at the peak. Absolutely. And then you realize that, you know, there has to be a way, there has to be a kind of a association and organization which you know, brings together like-minded people, which brings together people who talk about these issues, who talk about, you know, the slow food movement, who talks about your lost recipes, your lost heritage culture, you know, tourism, which is guided by food, regional food, and all of that. I think it only needed was one umbrella where we all can come down together and start promoting what we all believe in. So I think India Food Tourism Organization gave me that edge, and we're so proud to be associated with such an organization who's been working so closely with the ministry also, you know, trying to make policies, trying to, you know.
With the state ministry or central?
With the central ministries. And we from the states are trying our level best to, you know, bring in the tourism ministry. We're trying to get attention from the tourism ministry. There are amazing set of, you know, travel organizations who are also on board, a part of our mission. And I think when travel and food come together, I think it's a match that has already been made in heaven. It just needs a little bit of pressing and working together to something that we all have been dreaming that will come true one day.
And you approach it from both sides, from what I understand, both the cooking side as well as writing and storytelling side, right?
Yes. Yes.
And you also do workshops and then you sort of show people. So what all do you do? Do you do food walks? Do you do workshops? What do you do in the workshops? Tell us a bit about that.
We do I do a lot of workshops here locally in Guwahati also and upon invitation. So initially it was very casual for me. I mean, if somebody would invite me, it was just a casual invitation and I would just like rush there because there's food involved and there's a lot of learning involved. And on you know, it's like a good chance for me to also learn about other cuisines, apart from the cuisine that I support the most. So I always find myself in a win-win situations when such exchanges have happen. And I mean, the last workshop that we did was for ITC Royal Bengal, and it was a 10-day workshop that we did with the chefs where we flooded with whatever we know about our cuisine, and we introduced them with the tiniest bit of interesting ingredients because they were interested in our food. They were interested in setting up our entire section, entire
Yeah,
floor of
wow, we've been
ITC.
there in the Northeastern
Yes.
Food in ITC Royal Bengal. I think Chef Ashish was also no. There were some more people also involved with it, right?
Right,
But yeah.
yes.
And then this whole consortium set up a very nice sort of.
So we wanted to showcase Northeast in one platform wherein it's like an interesting market sauce that is happening, and then every section, every segment gives equal attention and opportunity for a state to showcase the best, and people from different walks of life can just go down to that level and enjoy and savor the best, So this is, I think, again, something that I've always dreamt of. An ideology that matched with mine, and we worked really hard for those 10 days, and I think I would congratulate such hotels with coming up with some interesting ideas like that wherein they can showcase the best of the country. And that is how we work. And then in return, we came back learning so much about our own food. There were chefs from Nagaland who gave us a very beautiful insight to their cuisine, different tribal cuisines of theirs, because this Nagaland, just one state, but with a multiple number of tribes,
Wow.
showcasing various different cuisines of each of the tribe. It's so unique and beautiful.
That's really amazing. I mean, I think in the rest of India, I think Northeast is just clubbed as one.
Yes.
But to sort of understand that there are seven states, and then within which there's so much diversity. So you've got about 10, 15 minutes left. So I want to give you the floor to say whatever you want to tell people about Assamese cuisine. Like, for example, if you want, should we do some myth busting first, and then we can. Assamese cuisine is all about smoked pork. Is that so? And ant silkworms. Yeah, no.
I mean, that is the biggest myth that one can carry, So
Huh.
I always tell my friends or travelers who are traveling to Assam Northeast for the first time, I always tell them, come with an open mind and do
Huh.
not keep anything, do not be fed with information from the internet or
Huh.
from, people who have never been to this region. There's
Huh.
always stories floating around. People who have never been to this side end up telling a lot of tales about our food and, the food habits of this region. So whenever there are friends and family and, anyone who contacts me for the first time that they are coming to Assam and what are the do's and the don'ts, I always say, please come with an open mind and do not
Huh.
listen to hearsay, because you will be exposed to some very interesting things, and that you'll be in a state of awe that, oh my God, I didn't know about this about Assam.
Huh.
For me, when people ask me about Assam, I always tell them the cuisine is all about greens. The first
Green.
thing that I'm, yes, the first thing that I emphasize on is that it's a region where you will see herbs that you have not seen anywhere else in this world. We are so filled with greens. The
Wow.
only thing here is that we mix greens with our proteins. That is one thing. It's always a combination food that we get. So we put our herbs with our fish, with our with our meat. So this is one thing there. Again, in Assam, if you see Assam, we being eight major tribes, we are eight,
In a sub.
we have eight major tribes and hundreds of sub tribes. We have a lot of communities, and we represent together as one Assam. So when we say one Assam, if you know, if Tiwas are giving you a certain Tiwa food, that is also Assamese. That's not wrong. It's not incorrect. If somebody from, say, Boro is giving you their tribal food, that is also an Assamese platter. And that's not incorrect. And that's totally correct. I mean, who will you justify as an Assamese cuisine? Or what kind of thali would make it an Assamese cuisine? So there's a lot of, so much of information, there's so much of things to showcase that one platter will not do justice to this region. So whenever there is one person who has a few hours in their hand, I try and present them with a fish thali, which is a representation of our culture, which is Brahmaputra flowing by right through the middle of the region and giving us the freshest of the fish. So I'm trying to give them a fresh fish thali, but if people come here with, a week's time and then they want to know and explore more and more of Assam, I think they should not be reluctant to try at least 5 different varieties of food items that is here in Assam. And you will be bedazzled to know, you'll be amazed to know that there would be hardly any, you know, pork item.
Not silkworm and everything.
Those are exotic food, you know, those are exotic food, those are our tribal cuisine. And that really makes, I think these are the ornaments in the thali. It makes the thali look really gorgeous. It makes it look very, very exotic. I mean, these are there. But again, we are people who eat things as per season. I mean, these are very seasonal food. In winter time, you know, when we are like, you know, lacking in protein and all of that, we already have a protein deficiency and all of that. That is when we consume these things. And it equates to the deficiencies that the Mother Nature has given us. So it balances everything. So I think our food is so balanced, but yet the variations are like huge. So whenever people are traveling, I always tell them, please keep your head, you know, your mind open and, you know, try every kind of food that is there. It's so Assamese.
Sanjukta, one thing which struck me when I went to Guwahati and, you know, even from what I hear about the bigger cities and this thing, is that there's a bit of a change happening. And with change, like, you know, there are influences coming in. And, you know, across the country, when it comes to smaller cities, there are certain things which are now being adopted, like, for example, you know, coffee shops and pastas and, you know, Guwahati being in Assam. I mean, of course, momos, which are probably more North Indian today than now, but people associated with Northeast, those actually come from Tibet. And then I remember there was a lot of excitement when I came because I think Kareem's or something like that was about to open, or Copper Chimney or something like that. So given that and what you are telling me that, you know, that Assamese food, which regardless of which tribe or which part of the state is from, is so rooted to its environment, to its nature, to seasons. So do you see this getting lost in the newer generation? And if so, what can be done?
Absolutely. This is one thing that we all are worried about.
Your kids, for example.
It's a very cafe culture that is, you know, that has completely become deep rooted here. I mean, who would not like a piece of this yummy cheesy pizza over a masoor tenga, you know? So that is there. That's a sad story. I think that is the transition that we all are going through. But I think yes, of course, there are movements like that of ours, which is a silent movement, but then we are working so hard. We are working every day in and out to promote what is ours and reclaiming it, you know. So it's there. I think it's something that I'll call, it's going happening parallelly. There is on one side there's this bustling city cafes coming up and, you know, sprawling all over. These are like cute bistros. You know, you also would like, I would love to go and sit and spend an entire afternoon there, you know, chatting over a nice cup of coffee and, you know, having those finger food. So it is there. It is there. And that is, I think, what comes along with you know, development or infrastructural growth, and you know, your city becoming more and more bustling, and these gets promoted because this is how I think we started identifying our cities with. You know, it's not a city really if you don't have a very fancy bistro. Yes. So I think I think it just happens. It happens parallelly. I think we have been able to embrace it, and that's the truth. This is what is going to happen. But I think people like us, people like our organization, needs to keep on, you know, knocking at that door, telling that, you know, listen, there is an alternate food, you know, system that is also happening parallelly. You need to check on that, you know. So as long as we have the health and to keep working, we will be working on you know, promoting our regional cuisine, promoting our farmers, promoting our, you know, ingredients, and promoting what is very regional, you know, which is rooted. We will be promoting, you know, forest cultivation. We will be promoting foraging more than, you know, a bistro coming up in the city. I think we will be equally excited that a new place has come in. I mean, I always feel that why is a Starbucks not happening in Guwahati when we all have the capacity to spend that kind of a money? But again, a person like me will also be rooting for the regional cause, will be rooting for the slow food movement, and we'll be working as well. So I think it's both happening parallelly, and it will go on as long as the city life is there, as long as youngsters are there, the generations are young, and we all have that money, the kind of, you know, we all gradually have that ability to keep spending so much of money on cafes and, you know, cafe food. So that is one side of the story. I think it's a part of the same coin, you know. It just goes on like that.
True. I mean, that's how sort of things are changing across the world. But I think one interesting thing which I saw in Guwahati, and I'm taking Guwahati as a yardstick because that's primarily where I've gone to, is that there are restaurants which are offering food from Assam, for example, like some Boro restaurants. Then the one place where I went to had the Mishing kitchen, the tribal food, yes. Majuli. Then Paradise, which is considered to be like, you know, the Assamese plains food. Yeah. And then there's also Naga food and things like that. So is this a newer phenomena? Are chefs and so on encouraging this? I know I also met Chef Atullah Akar and the work which he's doing. So do you see like the new generation of chefs coming, or are these more the old restaurants and nothing new coming up in that field?
I think it has somewhat stopped there. I think, you know, the names that you have mentioned are so iconic, and they're so iconic, but sadly, we have not been able to maneuver from there. So we stuck somewhere in between, and we have not been able to actually find a way out. And second thing that I always feel is that it's a human tendency. We really need varieties. I mean, if there are no variations and varieties, we'd start thinking that our lives have become dull, and then there's no point of us living, you know. So we're so multi-cuisine that way. We need variations in life. So I think that is where that is from where the whole structure of, you know, factory food and you know, cafes and bistros and concept of multi-cuisine dining restaurants have come up. It's the very sense that we need something different and new every day. So I think that is how multicultural people behave, and that is what we are all about. I mean, we need to have variations. But then again, the sad part of this side, the other side, is that one Atullah Akar or one Paradise is just not enough. And but then somehow we have not been able to move beyond that. And these iconic places and iconic people. The only thing that probably I would always praise that these iconic places and the names should not disappear, you know, in this big game of you know, development and infrastructural growth and all of that, that they should not vanish into thin air and disappear, or there shouldn't be any kind of a dusty layer on them. You know, they need to keep growing. This is what I would always pray and think.
Wow, that's a fabulous thing, and that's what you get when you get to speak to someone who's spent time studying international relations and think tanks, and, you know, travel across the country and the world. and also feels passionately about her own food. Because like you said, I mean, it's a delicate balance because human civilization wants to move ahead, wants change, but at the same time, there's so much which is there to be gained by being rooted to one's tradition. So thank you so much for your time, Sanjukta. I do hope that your dreams of Assam progressing and at the same time maintaining the glory of its culture, starting with food, it comes true. And I'm sure that when it does, it'll be a big part thanks to the efforts which you and people like you are putting in. So it was an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much, Kalyan, for having me. It's always wonderful to chat with you. I always have said that, and I'll still maintain that, you know, you are a part of Assam and we have literally inducted you into the community. So we're just waiting for you to make a visit, and hopefully it's a longer one this time so that we can take you into the rurals of the place where you get a nice idea about how the rural communities come together and they live and how they grow. And you know, I would absolutely love to take you around and show you how forest foraging happens. And wow, you know, so this is something that you really need to experience in your life, and we look forward to your visit again, and we hope a little longer this time.
No, I would love that, because even that express a visit which I made itself, that time itself was such a eye-opener, and I would definitely sort of look forward to that. And with that also, wish you a very, very happy Pujas in advance. I know people associate Durga Pujas with Bengal, but it's celebrated equally in Assam, Orissa, Bihar, different parts of Eastern India. And yes, in fact, we couldn't do the chat a couple of days back because she was doing Puja shopping, and I know how important that is, especially for the kids and the women, and why not even us guys. So so have a lovely, lovely Puja, and I hope to catch up with you in
Guwahati
and Assam soon.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.